Hi, my name is Warner Lewis. Thank you for joining me for Creating Home, a weekly podcast exploring what different successful individuals have done to allow them to find their physical, emotional, and spiritual home. We'll discuss their individual journeys, including disadvantages, roadblocks, adversity, and dead ends, as well as their strategies, successes, and support, which allowed them to overcome obstacles and thrive. Thank you so much for joining me today on Creating Home. Today, I have a friend who I've known for a while, and whenever I think of him, I think of him helping others. I think of hearing about him being in San Quentin, helping inmates. I think of hearing him about him, really anyone who is in need, he thinks of and he's there. And he's someone who comes from a background where you would think that maybe he would rest on family laurels and really be completely focused on himself. And he's actually the exact opposite. And that's what's always drawn me to him. And he's actually brought me into a lot of really good rooms where I feel I've been able to see a different part of life and be able to help others. And I've been eternally grateful for that. So today I welcome Zach Williams. And Zach, I'm really excited to talk to you about how you've created your life and created your home from which you've really dedicated yourself to helping others.
Warner, it's so awesome to be on this podcast with you. We've known each other for, almost 15 years.
It's pretty it's pretty crazy to think back that far. And I remember it was the East Village where we met, and life has changed a lot for both of us since then. But for you, it's been a steady ascent towards how you can help people. And we have a lot of other things in our lives that intersect. It started with food and beverage and the nightlife world in New York. And both of us, I think, have taken a pretty strong right turn away from that. I don't think I can't even imagine what a hangover would be like now. But yeah, I mean, I've just really been so impressed by your journey. And I would love first to take a step back and just hear where you're recording from. The name of this is Creating Home. And it was initially thought of as sort of a real estate type broadcast, but obviously that very quickly became not as interesting as learning about how people create their own lives. So I'd love to hear where you're recording from and sort of where you've been through the pandemic.
Sure. Well, we can certainly talk about real estate too. I've certainly had fun browsing the real estate apps at this time through the pandemic, seeing where everything's going. But yeah, I'm calling in from Beverly Grove neighborhood in Los Angeles from my back office, which is a converted garage. And yeah, it's a little hot out here. Fortunately, I'm air conditioned in here, but we've had an interesting summer here in Los Angeles, certainly in California on the whole, and I know you certainly have had interesting things that have been happening in New York, but for now things are all right.
I'm trying to think where exactly the best place is to begin with you. I mean, I know that. You know, both, I think the timing of our right turns and sort of becoming, I think, maybe more open to other people, things more altruistic and less hedonistic, maybe might have occurred around the same time. But I'd love to know, you know, when the huge bent of your life on mental health and helping others started. And were there any formative things that pointed you towards that being the way that you were going to give back and help others?
So my story relating to mental health started early in my life. I experienced pretty intense anxiety from childhood through to adolescence to adulthood. But the lens and orientation towards service is not something that really was catalyzed in me until I experienced bottoming out of sorts. After my dad died by suicide, I found myself self-medicating, using alcohol, trying to find other solutions, whether they were cannabis products, tried prescription pharmaceuticals. Those didn't work for me in the way that I wanted them to. And I just found myself feeling very dysregulated and traumatized and not really knowing where to go from there. And the thing that I found to be healing initially for me, once I could kind of come up for air and understand that I had an opportunity to really prioritize taking care of myself, which I didn't initially think about doing. And to a fault, I kind of focused on others and their process and trying to be there for everyone. And it ultimately exhausted me. And so the process of healing in earnest for me started really in finding healing and a path to recovery through mental health advocacy, through working with organizations that support mental health. And yes, I did certainly spend time at San Quentin teaching financial literacy, and that actually, before all the effort and focus on mental health, I was in San Quentin teaching, and that actually at its core catalyzed this journey for me, but it led quickly into working with mental health organizations, and I found that I could use my skill set, which relates a lot to working with organizations around strategy and organizational development and the like, and you know, where I could add value. I found that in turn it was enabling me to find not only common ground, but an opportunity to really begin the process of healing around all the wounds that have been opened up over the course of a lifetime, not dealing with the trauma that accrued. And of course, you know, my dad's suicide was very much a part of that, a primary part of that. So through that journey of discovery, I realized that I can't take care of myself in the way that I need to unless I devote my time and energy to service. And that was a major insight for me, to be able to have the privilege of giving my time and energy to service, to support myself, is something that I wouldn't have thought of would be part of the core of healing and taking care of myself in the way that I need to, around self-care and the like. So it was pretty profound, how quickly that orientation towards service has been helpful for me in taking care of myself.
You know, it really jumped out to me because we have, you know, so many commonalities in our fathers committing suicide, sadly being one of them. But, you know, I found the exact same thing that you're talking about, which is this duality, which seems so basic, but it only really hit me 6 months ago, exactly what you're talking about, that in order to help myself, I need to be there for myself in a way empathetically, compassionately that I've never been before, but I also have to be there for others. And those two things seem like polar opposites, but they clearly work hand in hand with me and obviously with you as well. And I share the thread of just incredible amounts of anxiety from childhood up through even today. But I think that the big difference with today versus childhood is I have an understanding now. I mean, I find it incredible when I read children's books to my kids talking about hungry, angry, lonely, tired. And they're just little basic things, but they're things that were that, you know, some people I think are just better at learning at an earlier age and being there for themselves. And it's become so clear to me how much I miss that and how, for me, my esteem was and still to a certain degree is based upon those things that are outside of me. And that's one of the things that I found so incredible about you is that in a lot of ways, you come from American royalty. And there has not been one interaction that we've had where there has been puffing your chest out about that or that anyone would know about that. And to me, someone who just was so lacking for esteem because of having a very, very suicidal and depressed father who couldn't go out, couldn't go do things. And I thought I needed this, something from outside of me to make me better and seem more enticing to people. I've always been so blown away by how that is not how you have filled that God-shaped hole. And I know there's been a lot of work around that, but I've always been so blown away by that. And is that something that was maybe a defense mechanism to sort of keep conversations about your father at bay, or have you found an inner strength outside of that your whole life?
I think in part there was a defense mechanism. Certainly my family values privacy. And so when we go out and put ourselves out there, we want it to be for something we can really stand for. And for me, I think, you know, when I was younger, I would certainly go out there and put it out there and would beat on my chest or puff my chest, as you referred to, because I didn't really have a clear way to define my sense of identity, who I was. And I think for people who come from certain backgrounds, especially those with larger than life parents or family, it can be hard to live in that shadow and be able to define your own sense of identity. I certainly struggled with it. It's only until I started realizing that I will follow in spirit in terms of similar values and the like to what my dad did, what my mom's done, what, you know, my other family members have done. But I appreciate different things. I like doing different things. I am in a different industry, you know, with what I focus on, and all these considerations just make up, you know, a mosaic that's me. And a large part of the first part of my life, I felt like I was very much in a shadow and had trouble defining what the constituents or the elements of me actually what they were. So you know, as I get older, as I become a dad, you know, I've got a 15-month-old son, and I really think about what it means to be able to show up for my son. And part of that involves not worrying so much about who I feel I need to be to live up to some sort of legacy or like, and more so what I can do to be the best version of myself that lives up to my expectations. Because that's really what matters at the end of the day, how you can set your own expectations and live up to them versus whatever crafted, imagined, or otherwise expectations that your family or your employer or you know, people within your peer group or the like have. If it's aligned, if you happen to have aligned values and expectation, that's awesome. But I have the privilege of being able to start crafting and establishing the road to, you know, my own path and destiny. And I'm very grateful that I have that opportunity. But, you know, there was a lot of heartache and pain and struggle to get there. And there still is, you know, by no means do I live a perfect or, you know, a life without challenge. But the challenges that I deal with in the day to day are things that I'm able to show up for, and can take a lens of kind of post-traumatic growth around. And what I mean by that is not letting the circumstances and elements lead me to a path of resentment and anger and frustration. I'd rather take my experiences and learnings and turn it into an opportunity to show up for others. First and foremost, myself and my family. And then in the outer spheres from that, organizations and causes I appreciate, the companies I work with, the company I started, things like that. But it's sequential. I think we need to really think about how you can prioritize, or at least I need to think about how I can prioritize first taking care of myself before I can show up for others. It just so happens that part of taking care of myself in a meaningful way involves service. So, you know, things are slowly starting to fall into place in terms of how I can commit to a life's mission associated with mental health support and removing the stigma, creating, supporting organizations and initiatives that really stand for mental health change on a systems level.
Yeah, I think it's amazing because of your history, having you out there, I know is going to be an enormous help. I almost equate it to Kevin Love coming out in the NBA about mental health and how he's completely changed it and taken away a lot of the stigma surrounding it. And I know for me, the most painful and hardest thing that kept me the smallest and will still show up occasionally is that feeling when you're suffering from anxiety or depression that you're alone. And that is the worst, most horrible thing. And because of it was a different time, a different age, I just learned from watching my father who, you know, battled to stay alive, just to be around, be there for me and my brother, a stiff upper lip. That's what I learned from an early age. And so for me, that meant not complaining. And I was actually talking to my cousin who came up to Connecticut to spend a weekend with us. And she brought up a story I'd forgotten, that I broke my collarbone when I was 5 or 6. And for 2 days, no one knew because I didn't say anything, because the lens I'd grown up around was, you know, just grin and bear it. And I thought about that 5 or 6 year old me with a broken collarbone, not complaining and being quiet, and everyone saying, wow, Warner's being so well behaved. And it makes me so sad to think about that and to think about being, you know, that feeling of just, I can't raise my hand and ask for help. I mean, I'm drowning here, but I just can't do it because, you know, it would upset the apple cart that I'm living in. And it helps me so much. Anytime I can have a phone call with someone or anytime I have a conversation with someone. And I found that being completely vulnerable, being completely open in the past 10 to 15 years of my life has helped me create a sense of self and strength that I never had before. Because once I bring those things that scare me or that I was worried about how people judge me into the light, they're no longer scary and they can no longer be used against me because I've taken the power away from them. And it resonates so much with me, your goal and mission, because for me, that's been the full scope of healing has been being open and being honest and being vulnerable and being there for others, not on the scope that you have, but it's just amazing how simple it is that if you take care of yourself and if you're there for yourself in a way others can't be, and you're there for others, the healing can begin. And I just, you know, sorry for my diatribe on that, but it's just, I can just feel and think of all those nights of just not sleeping and being terrified about something that never really happened. But, you know, I'm so in awe of your journey and your ability to so eloquently talk about the privileges and the recovery and the want to be there for others. And, you know, what I try to nail down on are Are there any specific steps that you can remember taking in your darkest hours, or steps that have led you towards the light, that you can think of as hacks that might be helpful for other people out there?
Yeah, certainly. That's a great question. The first thing I needed to do to really have some clarity around stuff is I needed to stop self-medicating to numb out. I was abusing alcohol and was doing it to just not feel. And unfortunately, that didn't enable me to really think critically and mindfully about what it is I needed to do to take care of myself in any meaningful way. Versus, you know, you're hungry, you need to go out, get some air, go for a walk, maybe go exercise, things like that. You know, it helped me look further out into the future and relating to what I needed to do to take care of myself. So that was one thing that was pretty helpful. Identifying relationships that needed support, specifically around my family, over the course of the past 6 years, I've managed to start repairing my family relationships. And that's something that, you know, degraded over time because I either took things for granted or was bundled up around resentment regarding specific things that didn't enable me to really see that family is what you got. And whether it's what you've been given or, you know, through genetics and showing up, or what you construct over time based upon any number of different circumstances. Family is there. It hopefully can be there for you in ways that other people can't be, for better or for worse, right? I mean, family's family. And so just understanding how important family is and family relationships are was something that I learned. And, you know, I had a strong, solid, profound relationship with my dad. I'm glad that we spent the time that we did together prior to his passing. But what I realize is that I have the opportunity now to continue to deepen the relationships with my family members, brothers, sisters, my brother and my sisters, and, you know, my mother, my stepmother, you know, extended family, my fiance, my son. You know, there's this opportunity now to show up in ways that I might not have in the past. And so that was something that I didn't necessarily prioritize historically. So those are two important things. The other thing is understanding how things like diet, exercise, focusing on taking care of my mental health, talk therapy, different compounds. I'm very passionate about amino acids. I started a company around it, amino acids supporting mental health support. You know, so there's the prioritization around my own well-being and mental health is something that helped me not having to rely upon self-medicating through alcohol or other means. And so that enables me like to wake up in the morning feeling energized and excited. And had I been abusing alcohol during the pandemic, you know, currently or in the past, I would be an absolute dumpster fire, you know? And when I'm self-medicating, I can't take care of myself. And if I can't take care of myself, I can't show up for others. I really can't. And suddenly it just becomes this kind of this cycle of self-pity and frustration and resentment. And what that ultimately leads to is kind of anger and cutting off of relationships and isolation as an end state, you know? And so I don't want that for myself, just like I don't want that for others. I feel that it can be very easy to default to being resentful and angry. Certainly this political environment we live in, a challenging social environment, both with the pandemic, but the polarization that's happening. I believe that, you know, all, what we're experiencing across the board are, there is common ground. I do feel there is common ground, and to have a situation where we're being pushed into camps, where we're being pushed into to isolating ourselves, whether as individuals or as groups from other groups. It's sad and frustrating to see, but I feel that there are opportunities to identify things like mental health support, things like, you know, our own personal rights or our civil rights. You know, there are opportunities to say, hey, we can stand for this together. And my hope is that through all this trial and challenge, that we can find ways in which there can be an openness to having dialogues, to fostering empathy, and ultimately to finding ways, ultimately leading to finding ways to reconnect. So I know I'm speaking in a grand manner and in aggregate, but you know, these are the things that I think about, and it does keep me up. I am very focused on mental health and mental health support and initiatives associated with that. So, you know, that's often my lens that I think about things. You know, all roads in my life lead to mental health, with the possible exception of spending time with my son and my partner, but and family. But you know, this is my calling. This is what it is, and I love it. It's an absolute privilege to be able to do the work I do. I hope I can support others in the way that they need to be supported. I hope I can inspire others, you know. But separating my identity from the shadow that I felt like haunted or influenced me over a part of my life, in terms of having to be like my dad, having to be funny, having to be a comedian, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, I didn't necessarily aspire to be a comedian, but I just wasn't sure what I aspired to do or be. I just tried to figure out what it is that was meaningful and fulfilling for me. And it was challenging the first 30 years of my life.
Yeah. The word that you hit on that I'd love to touch on is empathy. You know, we are two people who have been touched by suicide and by the, you know, the main men in our lives. And I realize how I've dealt with my father's suicide is by kind of shutting the memory of him and everything around him kind of off. I actually went back to work, I think 48 hours after, maybe 24 hours after, because I didn't know what to do. And I know you know Ari, and Ari has, you know, been just an amazing human being for me to be around. But I remember being in the office with Ari, and this was 72 hours after, 96 hours after, because I didn't even know what to do. And I remember getting a phone call about a situation that I'd usually call my father about, and just being like, holy shit, I'm about to lose my mind. Lost it, go in the bathroom, cry, and then just immediately shut down. And I've realized that for so long, I carried a lot of anger around about the fact that I felt I got robbed of the dad that I wanted to have. And I didn't have that, you know, the father-son bonding, going to ball games, doing this, because he just wasn't able to. And I had a really profound conversation with a friend who was recently on the podcast, who talked about self-care to a degree that was awe-inspiring. And we were having a coffee after it, and he said, you know, you got to realize you have two ways you can look at your story, and everything that you tell yourself is a story. And so why not use one that actually works for you? And he's like, you know, when you think about your father, use empathy and think about him. Like, everyone tries for the most part to do the best they can. And your dad was trying to do the best he could at all times. And I know that for a fact, but it was too painful for me to even sort of look at him through that lens or probe the relationship. And it really opened me up to look at it that way and to feel empathy for him, to feel that he didn't want to feel the things that he felt his whole life, that he didn't want to not be able to show up, that he didn't want the pain and suffering that he had. And I'm still, because it's only a few weeks ago, I had this conversation processing it, but using empathy for him means I can then use it better with myself and giving myself some space around things that I might not do perfectly. And, you know, I've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but I don't know who's going to listen to this. And I think it's probably rare that two people who have had loss in the way that we've had actually speak about it. So I don't know if this is something you're comfortable talking about or how you view it. But if you can sort of talk about how you view your relationship with your father and coping with depression and his ultimate suicide, you know, I would love to hear it because I know it would help me. Because I've never really talked about it with someone who's gone through what we've gone through before.
Sure. Well, I think the depression that my dad felt over a period of, you know, significant periods in his life was often masked or treated with exercise and work. You know, I think that was a large part of kind of who he was. He was so oriented towards showing up for others. Fortunately, his work enabled him to do that as an entertainer and comedian, actor, entertainer, comedian. And so when he was out on the road, when he was acting, when he was performing, it enabled him to support himself in certain ways. It was when you had that downtime in between films or being on the road for comedy tours and things like that. That's when it became challenging, and he sought to do things like bike ride. That was very important to him. Running at points in his life. That was a way to blow off steam because it was a type of thing where if he wasn't oriented towards performing, he would either need to be kind of working off that excess energy or he would be, feeling it, just feeling it all. He had a very, very thoughtful, hyperactive mind, and it was beautiful to see. It was really profound the way in which the speed at which he thought and the speed at which he could, you know, apply his genius I would almost say unprecedented. But when you talk about taking a high performance engine and you put it in a garage or, you know, in a lot for a period of time, it requires tuning. So I felt that, you know, it was great that I was able to spend long lengths of time with him, both in terms of his being with him during his downtime or while he was on the road, you know, not as much while he was on the road, but while he was on set performing and things like that. And, he saw it as service, you know, that didn't necessarily involve his work with the USO or in supporting things like the Chris and Dana Reeve Foundation or, you know, Wounded Warriors. I mean, any number of Challenge Athletes Foundation, St. Jude's. I mean, all these different organizations that he loved and wanted to support, but his performing was source of service for him. He found it extremely helpful and healing. He loved entertaining people. He loved it. It was what he lived for. And so I think dealing with depression often involved kind of figuring out how he could continue to show up and be enough as an entertainer, as someone who is so oriented towards service and making people smile and laugh. So I don't know. That's my lens.
Well, it's a very beautiful lens, and it is. You're not going on a limb saying that his genius and the speed with which he processed and performed was unprecedented and is the like we'll never see again. And just hearing you talk about him, you seem so at peace with everything and grateful. And you've used the word grateful many times, privileged, grateful. And you just seem so centered and so present. And it's really great to hear. And I'm so happy for you. And I'm so happy for all the people whose lives you are in now. And I think both of us probably made life a lot more complex than it need be. And it's kind of wild when you think about it, that if you just do the simple steps, get a good night's sleep, wake up early, eat well, show up for others the way you would like to be, people show up for you. Life can be pretty simple and pretty joyous, especially when you drop what I always call is the algorithm that I had and still have sometimes, which you described. Sort of, how do I show up in a way that other people will view me as something to be, highly acclaimed or worthy or what have you, and just drop that completely. And I found for me stoicism and just keeping it simple and basically virtue and wisdom. If I live my life with those two things as my guiding lights and prizing those two things over all things, I'll be okay. When I start thinking about, well, if I do this, this person might do that, and I might get that result, and this could happen, I'm in so much trouble. And it's just being present. And I'm very grateful to the shutdown for bringing me an enormous amount of pain in March, which forced me to bottom out and really start on this path of having these conversations with people like yourself who have been through the ringer and have come out the other side and are there for others. And I'm just so grateful that, today you were able to take this time to chat with me. I'm so grateful that you've turned me on to so many great organizations. And it's funny that already today I spoke to Jody, and I couldn't believe I hadn't reached out to her about being on the podcast before, and Xavier, and, just whenever there's goodness, you don't seem to be that far away from it.
Definite shout out to the Campaign for Fair Sentencing of Youth and the wonderful work they do.
Oh, without a doubt. And, I'd love just to sort of give you a few seconds now, if there are any other organizations and also your company, just to get a little bit of a rundown on your company and then other organizations that you've been touched by or you'd love to shine a spotlight on.
Yeah. Well, first off, I just want to preface going into the organization like that. I wish, I could consider myself, a righteous human and the like. There's times where I can certainly be righteous, but I need validation too. And sometimes a lot of my activity can be oriented around, it's like, well, this is great. And then I get some validation, and that fulfills my needs as a social person. I wish that wasn't the case. Sometimes it is. And I just want to call a spade a spade. We're human. I like to think that we try to orient towards altruism and being, doing things from a purely good level. And of course that's the lens that we have. And you know, I will continue to try to be oriented in that way. But, you know, I want to call out, just say, sometimes you need to do things to support you. and that's okay. Whether it involves, you know, posting on social media, getting, you know, likes or things like that. Whatever it may be, it's something that provides a little boost during a time that's otherwise stressful. Just see it, you know, I see it as the same thing like eating, you know, ice cream, eating sweets, you know, it's in essence, you're taking care of yourself in other ways. It's just when it comes to excess that it can be challenging. So I just want to call that out, you know,
okay.
Because I think it's important to know that, you know, trying our best to be oriented towards service and to show up for others requires taking care of ourselves in whatever way is needed, you know. But the organizations I'm supporting right now, which I'm super excited about, are, you know, in the mental health arena, there's a few. There's Bring Change to Mind, which is an organization that supports developing programming for young people, for people in high school and some universities, and also developing and deploying campaigns focused on removing the stigma. That's one organization that I love. Another one's called United for Global Mental Health, which is an international mental health policy and advocacy organization. It's a fabulous organization, equally as fabulous as Bring Change to Mind. And there's some very exciting initiatives coming from that organization. And then another one is called Inseparable, which is a national US-based policy and advocacy organization. And they're developing a policy platform that I'm extremely excited about. And I'm an advisor for them. And I've had a lot of fun working with that team. In terms of what I'm up to relative to my company, I started a mental health support company with the goal of developing and distributing products for stress and anxiety support. And we'll be launching in a couple weeks. The company is called PYM. PYM, it stands for Prepare Your Mind. We're hoping that we can provide a lot of help for folks through our products. And I'm very, very, very excited for that. It's a little bit weird just coming out there and putting myself out there and saying, hey, I stand for this. And I'm also starting a company and, you know, we need to build a follower base and establish customers. And we want to, you know, stand for mental health support at scale. And I have to admit it can be a little bit uncomfortable for me to be, you know, not laser focused on the not-for-profit working with mental health organizations advocating for, but I'm slowly becoming more comfortable with it. And that in part relates to, you know, our action and orientation towards, you know, needing some validation. I wish, again, I could say, hey, you know, we can operate from a purely altruistic standpoint, but I want to be honest. I think, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there, but it will take some time.
I mean, just the fact that you said that, I think makes all the difference in the world. I know for me, one of the reasons of doing this podcast is how uncomfortable it makes me. It's people laugh at the fact that I'm probably one of the more gregarious one-on-one people out there. And there's nothing that makes me recoil more than public speaking or the thought of doing a podcast. And you should have, if my wife could answer as to how irritable I was an hour and a half ago in the car, trying to figure out if we'd have reception where I'm recording this and trying to think through things to say. And instead of realizing it's always just a nice, easy flow because I'm gifted to have people like you in my life who I have a past history with and, you know, who are very good human beings and easy to talk with. But, you know, for me, I have to always put out there just how uncomfortable it makes me. But by doing the things that make us uncomfortable is what allows growth. And I'm so thankful for you giving me this time. And I want to just share a story about your dad. I think we might have talked about this before. I'm not sure. But when I was looking at boarding schools, I went to St. Andrews the winter when Dead Poets was being filmed there. And I remember it was the only snowfall I think they had had. And so no one was allowed to walk around campus because they were going to shoot. And having gone to St. Andrews, the lens of Dead Poets and Oh Captain, My Captain has always been a huge part of my life and for everyone who went to that school. And it truly is amazing, you know, what and how many people your father was able to touch. And I'm just so in awe of the relationship you have with him and his legacy now, because I'm only 10 years after my father's suicide able to start touching our relationship again. And it really is a guiding light for me, just hearing how you can relate to him now that he's no longer here. And you know, I'm definitely gonna reach out to you a few more times, because touching on this has been harder than I thought since the conversation I had with my friend a few weeks ago. But I want to have the thoughts and the memories and not have it be a subject around which I want to numb out. And you've done an amazing job of not doing that. And, you know, I really hope for that as well. So thank you so much for talking with me today. And I don't know if you have any final parting words or any other hacks or any other thoughts out there for this, you know, very unique time in history, but I'd love to hear them. As I am sure our listeners would as well.
I just orienting towards gratitude and service. You know, that's been the most helpful thing for me during challenging times. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have a relationship with my family, to be able to do the things I do, to be able to engage in mental health advocacy. And I'm really appreciative to have the opportunity to be on this recording, this podcast. Awesome.
Yeah, I really, 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 really appreciate it. Like, it's, you know, God's not a really, I shouldn't be throwing that word around, because I do believe finally that there's someone bigger than me out there in the universe. And that's been incredibly helpful for me, not thinking I have to control everything, but I do believe that the universe is no longer out to get me. And I do believe the universe puts the right people out there if we're willing to be present and allow them in. And I'm so thankful that you allowed me into your sphere. I'm so thankful we've stayed in touch for all these years. And I'm so thankful for you giving me your time today, Zach. You know, I hope you have a great rest of your day. I hope you have a great weekend. And I have no doubt that you're going to be able to be present for your son in a way that you could have never imagined being so 10 years ago. And you're going to keep on inspiring others. And I'm just glad to know you're out there.
Hey, thanks. The feeling's mutual, Warren. I'm really happy you're doing the work you're doing and to be your friend. So looking forward to continuing to try to make a difference where we can.
Well, thank you, Zach. Again, thanks for your time, and you're the best. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Creating Home. While we all face this new and uncertain world, I find it inspirational and reassuring to learn of our guests' journeys from around the country, and I hope you do too. Join us next week as we continue to learn what goes into creating home.